Hi, I'm Mark Brewer. For 18 years, I ran the Michigan Democratic Party. These days, I'm a lawyer and consultant to progressive nonprofits, political parties, candidates, and ballot question committees.
I'm Jeff Timmer. I battled with Mark and the Democrats for decades as executive director of the Michigan GOP and while advising Republican candidates at the local, state, and national level. Now I'm a political nomad who's put what's best for the country above carrying water for my former political party.
This is a republic if you can keep it. Inside the backrooms of Michigan politics with veteran political strategists Jeff Timmer and Mark Brewer.
Welcome back to A Republic If You Can Keep It. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by a Lansing-educated lawyer whose name is now one of the most recognizable in all of politics, Donald Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen. But first, Mark, let's get caught up on Michigan politics. It looks like the Republicans have informally settled on their 2022 candidate for governor.
That might be right, Jeff. And what was a pool filled with political nobodies, it now appears that the Republicans have a potential, and I emphasize potential, somebody, soon to be retired police chief, James Craig. What's your take?
Well, my take is that what they're trying to orchestrate here is clear. They're trying to have a consensus candidate. And I think it also demonstrates a tremendous amount of naivete or just unawareness, lack of self-awareness about how politics works. And it's the same idiotic, as history has shown, notion we have a Detroit Democrat African-American. So, boy, that will somehow cut into the Democrats' electoral base in Detroit, and then we'll be able to rack up margins outstate, and the Republicans are all patting themselves on the back, thinking how clever they are, where history has shown how just foolish and wrong that calculus is. And the first similarities are very clear to anybody familiar with, now somewhat ancient Michigan political history, and that's the 1986 campaign with Bill Lucas running against first-term governor running for re-election, Jim Blanchard. Lucas was a former elected law enforcement official, former sheriff, and then the elected Wayne County executive who switched parties and then got his ass handed to him when he was the gubernatorial nominee for the Republicans, got 31% of the vote. I mean, you or I could have got 32% of the vote. Let's be clear about that. Back at least Lucas had gone through the ringer of politics. He had been elected. He had a base. He had a presence. Craig doesn't. He's never been elected to anything. He's never had to run. He's never had to be a candidate. He has a lot to prove before he's even going to be, considered the likely nominee. You might say he's the early front runner, but there's going to be some folks, whether it's a Pat Kolbeck or somebody else, who say, hey, hold on here. I've actually been, looking at this. I'm a true, a true Trump believer. I'm going to, give this guy a run for the money. Whatever Ron Weiser has orchestrated here or trying to orchestrate, they didn't check with me. And might have some other thoughts.
I agree with a lot of that, Jeff. I wouldn't call him a Democrat, by the way. I think he's a Republican. I think he's long been a Republican. You just look at his views, very strong on the Second Amendment, in favor of arming citizens. He's attacked the Black Lives Matter protesters. He's a regular on Fox News even before he made this announcement, brought in to Michigan by Snyder. So I think he is a Republican, not a Democrat. But your analysis in terms of, I think, the Republicans thinking they can try to slice off Democratic supporters, I think, is part of their calculus. Didn't work back in the 80s for Lucas, and it didn't work most recently for John James either. I think that's a recent example of somebody with a strong resume, right? Businessman, military background, everything. And even though, frankly, I said this before, I think Gary Peters did not run a strong campaign. And back in 2018, Debbie Stabenow didn't lay a glove on James intentionally. Never went after him. And he's got a lot of baggage in his thing. But still, he lost. He lost. And I think, you got to look at that kind of thing. Now, again, my view on this next year, Democrats cannot take anything for granted. It's going to be a first Biden midterm. Turnout will be different. I don't think any of the Democrats at the top of the ticket can take anything for granted. But you're right, though. We'll have to see how this plays out. with him. Can he organize, right? I mean, you may remember 214. Everybody thought Terry Lynn Land was a wonderful candidate, and she ended up imploding because she was incapable of stringing a couple words together, frankly.
That didn't surprise people who knew her.
Right. Yeah. And I was surprised, too, that by her implosion in that race. So, you know, here, Craig's not going to be able to keep getting away with how loyal are you to Trump? I mean, I think if he wants Trump's endorsement, he's going to have to call the election last year a fraud, which is what Trump and a lot of the folks in the Republican Party want. And so far, he's not been willing to go there. That may not be enough. Now, on the other hand, I think back about, and this isn't in the Democratic Party, but I also think of 210, right? Where at the beginning, nobody thought Snyder was going to do the, at least my perception, Jeff, you can correct me. You know, he's got this field full of folks who've run before, got money. But what happened was that those other folks split up that vote, that more conservative vote, and Snyder managed to slide through. So those folks who want to stop Craig, I think they got to get their act together, first of all. And if there's three or four alternatives to him, they may end up splitting the vote and he comes through. He wouldn't need 50% to win a primary in that scenario. So I'm just, you know, talking through and thinking through some of these complexities that he and the Republican field are now going to face if he gets into this race, as it looks like he will.
And I look back to 2018 when there was a very skilled and capable politician in Bill Schuette who found it difficult to navigate first the primary by demonstrating the necessary fealty and bended knee to Trump, and then was completely and totally incapable of shifting and pivoting because of that. It made him unelectable in November. And I don't know why anybody would look at the situation now and think, okay, we're going to have a candidate who, on the night of his retirement from the Detroit Police Department, happens to go on Fox News and Newsmax and OAN to do the gauntlet of batshit news to talk about the state of the Republican Party today and start to set himself up to win a Republican primary. Craig is going to be positioned just as much as a Trump candidate in when he emerges from the primary, if he emerges from the primary in next August and August of 2022, as Bill Schuette was. But Craig has no demonstrated ability so far to then somehow expand his reach and attractiveness in a way that Schuette never could. Now, that doesn't mean that you have to be a 30-year politician in order to ever get elected statewide in Michigan. Clearly, that's not the case. But Craig has a lot to demonstrate, a lot to prove before anyone can take him seriously as a legitimate candidate who can unseat Whitmer. All that being said, the Democrats need to take every challenge seriously. They need to take the history of the midterms seriously. They can't rely on the fact that the economy should be booming along next year, and that might provide them, if not with a tailwind, at least certainly not a headwind as they're going into the election. They have to take it seriously. But so far, if I'm the Whitmer campaign, I'm not losing sleep last night with what I've seen from James Craig so far.
Right. But I think, you know, you do need to get ready. You need to do the research. You need to be prepared in terms of it. We'll see how he performs in terms of whether he's adept enough. It's one thing, as Dick DeVos learned, to be at the top of a hierarchy and be the boss and give orders. And another thing then to be out, in public, dealing with the press who don't take orders, and nor do other folks in either party who are asking you tough questions every day and holding you accountable if you make a misstatement. One thing I want to observe here, Jeff, I just think this is going to be a real challenge for pollsters. We had, problems with polling in 2016. Despite their best efforts, it reoccurred last year. I mean, I think we've seen a lot of Trump voters and others who are, reluctant to answer polls for whatever reason, but now compound that with people's difficulty in dealing with race. People do not want to admit straight up their attitudes on race, particularly if they perceive that they may be perceived as biased or prejudiced. So I think getting some honest, accurate polling in even the Republican primary, let alone a general next year, if Craig makes it through, is going to be very, very difficult, because it brings together the two biggest problems that polling has had in this country historically and now more recently.
That's a very good point. And I think that, you know, one last thing about Craig in his persona and record that he does have in terms of public perception so far, as limited as it is, so much of the stories that have been written in the last few days since his candidacy has been floated has been about, you know, how he kept Detroit from erupting after the Black Lives Matter protest and the George Floyd protests last year. But there's been very little said about the fact that Detroit has a very, very high crime rate. He's been chief for 7 or 8 years. That crime rate has increased, not decreased. His record is far more than what happened last June or July with regards to the BLM protest or what didn't happen in Detroit. And so he's going to have the entirety of his record, not just in Detroit, but he has a long career in law enforcement leadership. Anybody who has a long career in public office, in even if it's appointed positions like police chiefs, is going to have a record in things that he's going to have to answer for and defend. There will be pluses, and there's always minuses. And how is he going to deal with that?
A lot of disgruntled employees and others that I'm sure he has dealt with over the years, and now they will have every incentive to become whistleblowers.
And I would say that, you know, being the darling of his banter last night with Laura Ingraham about whether or not he should announce his candidacy on her show or Tucker Carlson's show shows you where this guy is coming from. But it also shows a complete lack of awareness about what's going to elect somebody governor in a state like Michigan. He's not running to be the Republican nominee. If he's really running to be the governor of Michigan, he's starting off by digging a hole.
Yeah, if he's looking for a coronation in either the Republican Party or the general election, he's in the wrong place.
Jeff and Mark will be back after these messages.
Epic MRA is pleased to be a sponsor of this podcast. Epic MRA is a Lansing-based market research and public opinion polling firm with decades of experience measuring public opinion about politics, ballot proposals, federal, state, and local issues. Our clients include media outlets, school districts, colleges and universities, state agencies, and local governments across the state. When it comes to measuring voter opinions, Epic MRA has been known as the go-to Michigan pollster for over 25 years. Visit www.epicmra.com to learn more.
My name is Dr. Tony Fauci here at the National Institutes of Health. If you've recovered from COVID-19, your plasma has antibodies that may help others fight COVID. Please donate plasma now. You can literally save lives. There are thousands of locations across the country where you can donate. Find a site to donate your plasma at coronavirus.gov.
Produced by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services at taxpayer expense.
The Michigan Polycast. It's been called one of Michigan's top political podcasts by Hourly Detroit.
Each week, longtime political junkies Christine Barry and Walt Sorg offer news and views on Michigan politics and policy, as well as national issues impacting our pleasant peninsulas. And they are joined by some of the state's biggest names from government, politics, academia, and nonprofit groups, with an in-depth look at those issues.
Subscribe now to the Michigan Polycast, online at www.michiganpolycast.com.
We're joined today by Michael Cohen. He spent 12 years as Donald Trump's personal attorney and fixer, only to have Trump throw him under the bus in the Stormy Daniels criminal conspiracy. He now is a star witness for multiple law enforcement agencies in the great state of New York, as well as the best-selling author of Disloyal and a host of the very successful podcast, Mea Culpa, which is Latin for By My Fault, something Michael Cohen freely discusses on the podcast and in interviews. Thank you for joining us on A Republic If You Can Keep It.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for joining us.
Well, you're welcome. And don't forget about my hashtag, Under the Bus Club. You know, I came up with that one while I was on Joy Reid. Joy and I had such a good time on MSNBC that we were laughing so hard that it was kind of difficult to concentrate. She's She's a great interviewer, I'll tell you that.
Well, she's probably a lot better than we are, so don't hold us up to the same standard. You mentioned, you know, throwing under the bus, and that's kind of what I was thinking. I'm sure there's a few things in the news recently that I'm sure you have some thoughts on. The Federal Election Commission and their decision to drop the investigation into Trump and the campaign, something that, you're paying a price for, but he appears to be avoiding. And then, the recent FBI raid of Rudy Giuliani's Manhattan pad. So, I'll just, get your thoughts on kind of the current state of affairs, the fact that there seems to be, some disparity in the system, depending on, people's politics. And I'm sure you have some thoughts on this.
Actually, I have a lot of thoughts onto it. As far as I'm concerned, I don't understand the FEC's ruling. To me, it doesn't make any sense. Not only was I convicted on that specific charge, I was very specific in my allocution when I stated that the payment to Stormy Daniels, the $130,000 payment, was done at the direction of and for the benefit of Donald J. Trump. What I also found to be very troubling is the fact that the Southern District of New York, you may recall, Jeff, the Southern District of New York had about a dozen sealed indictments that were sitting in their office. And from people who I know that are close to the Kushners, Charlie Kushner, Jared's father, was running around saying, my son's going to be indicted, my son's going to be indicted. And I know a lot of people, we have a lot of mutual friends where that was Charlie's big concern. What's interesting is that the Southern District of New York ended up determining that there wasn't enough information in order to prosecute. And so they closed the investigation as well. And I never understood the reason for that, considering they came at me so hard for a plea of guilt. I don't understand. I just don't understand it. But worse than that is then the FEC's. Now, look, let's be very honest with one another here. The FEC would have been the right thing for them to have done would have been to hold him responsible for campaign finance violation. I mean, it's just so blatant and it's so obvious in the fact that Donald Trump had to sign every one of those forms. Donald Trump also knew that the $130,000 was for the benefit of the campaign, as it took place about 12 or 13 days before the election that we ended up doing the non-disclosure agreement. Why they ended up with the decision that they did, why the fifth person chose to abstain, I don't know. Is it the Democrats' ideas that let's just say goodbye to that bad chapter in American history and pray to God it never comes back? Or do we just go ahead and try to move forward, waiting for the stench of Donald Trump to come back in either 2022 or 2024? But their decision, I thought, was ridiculous. And yeah, the guy is like Teflon so far. He is absolutely like Teflon.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch. And, there's I've seen Twitter abuzz in the last 24 hours with, like Preet Bharara and others saying, oh, there's word that there's going to be indictments coming soon. And, there could be. I mean, there could be a lot. It could be an avalanche for all we know. I'm sure you're tuned in and have ears all over the place and talk to people. The breadth of what could be coming, everything from money laundering to tax evasion to, there's so much, the election fraud and tampering, the Georgia, Secretary of State business. There's so much that could be coming his way that it's just, we could have a steady diet of this for the next 4 years.
Well, good. And we all should. You asked me in the previous question, there's a second half to that question that dealt with Rudy Giuliani. Interestingly enough, I was walking, I'm out in the park 2 hours a day, despite being on the home confinement. And that's my exercise. I go walking through the park And as I turned 61st Street and Madison Avenue here in Manhattan on Mother's Day on Sunday, I turned, and who's walking directly at me, staring straight into my face, but no other than Rudy fucking Giuliani. I mean, I couldn't, but, and there he is. He's walking with some lady with long brown hair. I guess she wants to be Mrs. Giuliani. What is it, number four or number five? In that way, she could divorce his fat ass too, and then end up with a $42,000 a month alimony. I have no idea. But I'll tell you, it's interesting. He was walking. He reminded me so much of, and this actually bothered me. I don't wish, you know, illness on anybody, maybe other than, you know, Trump and company, or maybe Giuliani too. But he was waddling like the Penguin. I mean, he must be 300 pounds. He was all bent and hunched over. I couldn't believe when I looked up and I saw that it was Rudy. Of course, you know, I had to turn around and go, Rudy! You know, he just walked right past me with this young lady, had nothing to do with me, had no interest in me at all, you know, whatsoever. But I thought it was really kind of funny. Now, as far as Rudy getting his home and his law office raided, I like the fact that so many people came out for Rudy, Republicans. And I do have to give this to the Republicans. They're much fiercer fighters than the Democrats. If it was the opposite, everything was complete topsy-turvy day, right? Like bizarro land where everything is the opposite. Rest assured, Republicans would be all over this. Every single thing that they can do in order to slam Joe Biden, they would be doing. Where the fuck are all the Democrats, Jeff? I don't understand it. Where are they? What are they doing? Why now that we have Merrick Garland? Where are the fucking FOIA requests that congressmen have been asking for 8 months, 10 months now? Where are all of the congressmen now forcing Merrick Garland to do something? What about the unconstitutional remand of me back to prison because I refused to waive my constitutional rights and not publish my book, Disloyal, right? And I could promise you, Trump was livid when he found out that I was the number one New York Times bestseller for about 3 weeks. But going back to Rudy for a quick second, what they got out of Rudy, rest assured, is a treasure trove of information, because Rudy just has become an embarrassment. He is a shady, he's a shady character. He has taken on Trump and company's persona, thinking that he too is Teflon. He's running around the world making all sorts of deals with governments in order to bring in money for his security company. That's what he was doing. And I know this because Rudy and I discussed it when Trump first became president. He asked me to join Giuliani Partners. And that was always his goal. Was now, we know that he had to be making money somewhere. Lord knows he wasn't getting it from Donald Trump, who doesn't pay legal fees. And that nonsense of $20,000 a day or $140,000 a week. Yes, people, I know how to do math, or $140,000 a week. I have to be honest with you. The fact that Rudy even thought for a split second that Donald would ever pay that amount of money, even though it was coming from supporters, goes to show you just how off Rudy Giuliani's brain is today.
Well, that's certainly true. I mean, we've seen that in terms of the two or three big fundraising efforts that Trump mounted last fall, allegedly for attorney's fees and other costs associated with the election. As far as we can tell, there was never any payout to folks along the lines that has been described. You know, Giuliani showed up here last fall, Michael, and, you know, brought his dog and pony show to our Michigan legislature, making the same kind of wild allegations about the Michigan elections. Of course, without any proof, with you know, a lot of folks in tow, some of whom are now going to run for office here. So we're still seeing the fallout in Michigan of all of this. I'd be really curious if you think there's anything to Giuliani in terms of illegal activity beyond, you know, the foreign registration, you know, the foreign lobbying issues. Do you think there's anything else that could turn up?
You know, Mark, that's a great question. The problem with, or the benefit of what Rudy has done, is engaging in these multiple conversations with multiple different people. So we don't know how far he actually took these various different matters that he was allegedly involved with. What if hypothetically, and I used this before, I've used it on my own podcast, Mea Culpa, as well as on television, but what if hypothetically there's communications between Rudy and Bill Barr? What if it's about remanding me back to prison based upon my refusal, that this whole thing was set up and Rudy had a hand in it? Well, that will certainly be evident once the Southern District of New York and the rest of the prosecutors go through all of the information on his phone and on his computer. Another issue that I actually have been thinking about a lot, and I'm very curious your take on this as well. One of the things Andrew Giuliani, the only person that's possibly dumber than Eric Trump in this entire field of characters, is he came out on television, stated, I wanted to give the FBI Hunter Biden's computer. Now, in front of their apartment building over on Madison Avenue, when they were doing the press conference. And I was saying to myself, this is so interesting. First of all, Andrew has to understand that they can only take what's listed on the warrant, meaning his cell phones, Rudy's computers, and so on. If this, in fact, is Hunter Biden's computer, they certainly don't have the ability to take it. They'd have to go effectuate another warrant. But the question that I have, why does Rudy even have Hunter Biden's computer? My understanding and recollection, and I could be wrong, is that that computer that belonged to Hunter Biden was taken by the FBI from the store that was fixing the computer, allegedly. So to me, the only thing I can deduce is the fact that Rudy made copies. So this is probably one of Rudy's computers that they downloaded all the information off of Hunter Biden's computer and put it on this, we'll call it burner computer. And now he wants to take a burner computer and give it to the FBI. I just find the whole thing to be, I don't know, screwed up, weird, indicative of Rudy Giuliani's loss of his moral compass or whatnot. I don't know, but somewhere along the line, I believe that making a copy of Hunter's computer may also be a violation. It may also be illegal. I'm not 100% certain. But I believe that there's a treasure trove between his computers, his cell phones. And I do believe that all of the information, all of it, will end up being usable by the Southern District, because everything that Rudy was engaged in as it related to this administration, they will be able to claim the crime fraud exception rule. And chances are, knowing the way Donald Trump works, he likes many people to be involved, including his own children. So if Ivanka or Jared or Don Jr. or Eric or Weisselberg or somebody else or Andrew are on these communications, they are no longer deemed privileged because they broke the privilege by having a non-attorney attached to it. So rest assured, whatever the Southern District wants to use, they will have full access and full capability of using it.
You know, on one hand, there are these corrupt, dangerous authoritarians who led us on January 6th to an armed insurrection to overthrow the government. And on the other hand, it's just like you said, they're just weird. They're these clown actor, ham-fisted weirdos that just seem to bollocks their way through these things, yet it hasn't caught up with them in any legal sense, at least with Trump. That's the amazing thing, is you mentioned earlier Teflon, how somebody so seemingly incompetent and barely able to chew pudding at this point is able to slide through with no great cognitive ability to slide through. How does he end up the luckiest man, perhaps, because it certainly isn't for strategic planning on his part.
Yeah, and I don't believe it has anything to do with strategic planning, because Donald Trump doesn't plan more than 2 seconds ahead of whatever crackpot statements come out of his mouth. I believe, again, that this is negligence on behalf of the Democrats. I believe that they are giving him a pass and not pursuing things with the vigor that rest assured Republicans would be doing. Again, going back to my very first statement, if in fact the shoe was on the other foot, could you imagine Bill Barr as the attorney general right now under Donald J. Trump, assuming that it was Joe Biden that was the previous attorney with all of this nonsense going on? Bill Barr would be all over Hunter Biden. Hunter Biden would not just be incarcerated right now. They would be talking about an execution in Madison fucking Square Garden, right? Put on by Donald J. Trump Productions, right? I mean, this is what, and Donald would come in with a gown, right? And a robe like he was Caesar to decide whether it's going to be a thumbs up or a thumbs down, like in the movie Gladiator. Everybody hail Trump, hail Trump. And for some unknown reason, the Democrats don't want to get their shit together. Why? Are they afraid that that Donald Trump is guilty? He is. Are they afraid that he could potentially be the very first president of the United States of America that's incarcerated? Well, he certainly wouldn't be the first in the world. We all know that in France, Sarkozy, right, was found guilty and allegedly doing 1 year in prison. And I don't know if it's prison or if it's house arrest or what have you. But what are they afraid of? What are they afraid of? If you have the evidence, look, let me be the evidence alone. Donald Trump, Alan Weisselberg directed me to pay $130,000 to Stormy Daniels. Hush money payment, FEC. Why you made the mistake? I don't know. Southern District of New York, what happened to those sealed indictments? I don't know. But if I'm guilty of it and I pled guilty, Donald Trump is guilty. It's Alan Weisselberg and David Pecker. Instead, everybody seems to be getting immunity. So what's the reason? I don't know. Democrats need to get tough. They need to get strong. They need to get vigilant, or you're going to see real issues come 2022 and definitively in 2024. Look, Donald Trump is a grifter. Donald Trump is full of shit. He's lies like you breathe. He's not going to run in 2024. I give that a 10% chance that he runs. But here's what I will tell you. There is a 0% chance that he runs if he's incarcerated, right? If in fact that he is held to the responsibility of his own dirty deeds. And why Republicans, right? Why Democrats are not going after the Republicans the way they need to, I don't know.
Yeah, this is a spot where Mark and I might differ. I've said for the last couple of years, I'm really glad that the Republicans are no longer in control of the House and now the Senate, but I wish the Democrats were. And that's exactly to your point there. There's so much they could be doing that they're not. You know, just when it comes to the court of public opinion, the hearings they should be having every day to expose what was going on in this administration, in the previous administration over the last 4 years. You know, I don't know why it's May and we're still talking about a January 6th commission instead of having one. You know, we're now slowly moving toward that direction, but shit, by the time they get their act together, it's going to be 2024.
All right, hold on. Let me jump in here for 2 seconds, talk about hearings and the farsity behind the hearings that have taken place. Now, I do have to say that the Ukrainian scenario, when they had the hearings onto it, real fascinating, terrible ratings because nobody gave a shit. Do you really care for a split second as an American citizen? Do you think for 1 second that any of your listeners are thinking or caring about whether or not the United States turns over $400 million to Ukraine for armaments, for military arms? The answer to that is 99 out of 100, if not 100 out of 100 will say no. I'd rather the money stay here in America, go to schools, go to healthcare, go to bring up the wage to $15 an hour, you know, roadway infrastructure. I don't care. Not my problem. But I will tell you what they would have been pretty involved with: obstruction of justice, witness tampering by Trump and others. Why aren't they going with that? Instead, they keep running after the dumbest things on the planet. I mean, I don't understand. Yes, they did a great job, and then listening to the folks that Trump brought on, from Seculo to the rest of these morons, I get it, right? They did it. They joined it because Trump probably wasn't paying them either. A stupid job. They should have easily lost. But we all knew that the Senate wasn't going to confirm that decision. I mean, it was nothing but a show. And Democrats, if I was leading the House, I would have turned around and said, I'm not putting on this show. I'm not playing this game. Why? So we put through our articles of impeachment. First one, second one, doesn't matter. And you've already made the determination, the Senate, especially at the first one when they had control, that you're not going to convict Donald Trump. So what are we doing? Wasting our time? Oh, yeah, we're doing our duty. They made fools out of themselves, both sides. And it's time for the Democrats to get vigilant, get mean, right? Do exactly what they would do to you and stop all of this kumbaya bullshit where everybody has to be empathetic. You have to now be a little Trump because he opened up that Pandora's box and he needs to be put into that box, and that box needs to be sealed and tossed off the side of a mountain.
Well, look, I think in defense of my party, I got to say, I think Biden and the Democrats in the Congress are focused right on substance. You know, the Democrats so narrowly control the Congress that I think they've got to stay focused and united in terms of trying to get substantive things done. And I think leave to the criminal justice system. I understand your criticisms, Michael, all of this. I mean, look, there's this Cy Vance investigation, right? Which is being, you know, the U.S., not the U.S. attorney, but the Manhattan attorney.
That's the Manhattan district attorney. Has nothing to do with the federal government. The federal government should be all over this shit. 1, 2, 3, and end of story. Now, you talk about substantive, right? Substantive, what? Are you talking about policy? Right. What if Joe Biden wants to actually effectuate things quicker than they're doing now? All he needs to do is do things through executive order. He has to look. Reality is reality. And bizarro land is bizarro land. You have to agree that the Republicans, Mitch McConnell said it himself, intend to do every single thing possible, everything possible, in order to stop Joe Biden from having any success. Now, to me, I don't care if you're Republican or you're Democrat, that to me is stupid. You're willing to hurt the United States of America as an elected official in order to benefit your party, despite the fact that you know that there are things that the Biden administration are doing, like the COVID relief package, that help all Americans, which is what Biden said in his inaugural speech. To me, it's tantamount to being angry at an airline and saying, you know what, they did me wrong. I hope the plane crashes. Meanwhile, you're a passenger on that plane. That's to me how stupid that the Republicans are behaving right now. They want to go down with the ship or down with the plane in order to benefit their party. It makes no sense to me. And what Biden needs to do is he needs to acknowledge that, not tomorrow, not yesterday, right now. And he needs to go ahead and he needs to, as far as I'm concerned, he needs to start doing things through executive order. Let me ask you this question. How come so few people have been confirmed as of date? We're what, 105, 106 days in? The last person I think that got confirmed is Merrick Garland.
Actually,
Biden, what's up with that?
Biden got his cabinet confirmed faster than most presidents overall. It started slow, but it went in the right direction and relatively quickly. Again, you know, I think you saw this in the fall campaign where Biden, I think, correctly chose not to relitigate impeachment, not to keep, you know, doing that over and over again, but focus on substantive things like the American Rescue Plan, like the infrastructure plan, the other kinds of things. Because I think, you know, we've got a midterm coming. And I think just going down the rabbit hole after Trump doesn't do the Democrats any good in terms of, one, enacting policy, but two, trying to succeed in next year's midterm elections, which historically are tough for a president's party. And I'm content to let the criminal justice system, Cy Vance and these others, continue with their investigations and see what happens. I think an obsession with Trump is a mistake for the Democrats and for the country.
It's how could you not be obsessed with it? All you have to do is look at the ratings of every single television show, news, cable. All you have to do is look at all the the journalists, and so on. Every newspaper had had ratings bonanzas and was selling more newspapers simply because of the craziness of Donald Trump. What you need to do now, like I said before, is you have to put the animal back in the box. You got to smack it on the snout, throw its ass back into the box, seal it, and bury it so that it never comes back around. Because Donald Trump is an evil human being. Donald Trump never wanted to be president of the United States of America. In 2015, 2016, even as he was rising in the polls, first of all, he never thought he was going to win. But what he initially wanted by starting the campaign was that this campaign was really supposed to be the greatest infomercial in the history of U.S. politics. And somewhere along the line, the son of a bitch ends up winning. Now he doesn't want to really be president. He wants to be a dictator. He wants to be like Kim Jong-un. He wants to be an autocrat like Putin. He wants to be, you know, like another Duterte, Maduro. He wants to be a Caesar, right? He wants to be a monarch like Mohammed bin Salman. He doesn't want to be the president. He doesn't want anybody to have the ability, Republican or Democrat, to challenge anything that comes out of his mouth, because he believes that he is of divine intervention, that everything that he says is right, which is why he'll acknowledge, I've never made a mistake in my life. That's why I've never had to apologize for anything. I never had to go to confession because I've never done anything wrong. I mean, the notion that Donald Trump has never done anything wrong is comical. And yet, he'll still come right out and say it. He'll still clear out a street shooting rubber bullets. You know, Ali Velshi got hit in the neck with a rubber bullet that day when Donald Trump cleared the street simply so he could take a picture in front of the church, right? I mean, that's not problematic. The problem is that Donald Trump has done so many unorthodox, illegal, bizarre things that nobody even knows where to start, because one leads to two, that leads to 10, to 20, to 50, almost as like his 35,000 lies over 4 years, more than any other president by a multiple. So, yes, it's another rating score for Trump, right? It's another Guinness Book of World Records for Trump.
I'll both sides this one. I think that what Mark is saying, that if money is going into people's pockets, if bridges are getting built, if roads are getting paved, if people are going back to work, if the economy is booming, that substantive election platform for Democrats to run on in 2022. But at the same time, you don't take a knife to a gunfight. And there are people, you know, we saw it after the election, we saw it leading up to the election, and we've seen it since, that the Republicans in the Trumplicans, whatever you want to call them now, they haven't given up. They didn't lose on January 6th or November 3rd or January 20th. They're trying to change the rules now. And if people don't understand that the rules are fundamentally changed, that one side isn't playing by those old rules. If I mean, you know, there's still people in a lot of ways. I see the Democrats still, you know, fighting no punching below the waist, while the people on the Trump side are just kicking them in the balls repeatedly
on voting rights and those kinds of things. You know, Democrats are fighting back with you know, good, honest Republicans like you. I mean, we're fighting that with recalls here. We're fighting back against the voter suppression efforts. So, you know, I think that's very different from going down a personal rabbit hole with Donald Trump and just giving him the ratings and attention Michael points out he so rightly thrives on.
No, I agree. But I thought if we were saying that the some people are arguing we need to let the past be the past, not relitigate everything.
I'm not saying that.
And I don't think that, you know, I don't ascribe that to you, Mark, but I think there are a lot of folks in the kind of the genteel confines of the Beltway in Washington who have this idyllic notion or this naive notion that things are going to somehow revert back to the way they were before 2016 if we just have enough time and distance and separation. And that's on both sides. I've seen Republicans, you know, my friend John Kasich has been saying, oh, you know, Donald Trump's influence is lessening every day. By what measure, you know, and maybe his personal influence, but the party is, I mean, look what's happening with Liz Cheney right now.
And I agree with Michael. We just got through a very, very dangerous part of American history, the closest, I think, maybe even worse than the 30s, when the country could have gone down fascist, autocratic path. Michael's absolutely right about that. And we can't forget that. And we got to make sure we put into place institutions and laws, whatever it takes, culture, rebuild the culture to make sure it never happens again. But again, I don't think we do that by playing Trump's game of focusing on him personally. I'm content to let the criminal justice system work out. Look, he's only been out of office 4 months. Vance just got, what, probably millions of documents about the Trump Organization and its financial affairs over years. It takes time to work through all of that and so forth. And the same with all these other folks. So I think it's a little early, a lot early, to simply say, Democrats are ignoring this. It's being written off. Investigations take time, particularly good ones. They're going to stick when they bring indictments and they go after folks.
Okay. However, though, Jeff, you made a statement that they're not playing by the rules, right? Now, here's the problem, meaning that, the Republicans aren't playing by the rules. Democrats are trying to play by the rules. Let me explain that Donald Trump changed the notion of the rules. Donald Trump changed the notion that rules even exist. They existed for what he wanted to effectuate. So when you say that they're not playing fairly by the rules, the question that Donald Trump is saying, wait, whose ball field is this? It's mine. It's my field. It's my rules. It's my ball. They're my teams. I'm going to decide who wins and who loses. The attorney general right now, as far as I'm concerned, should already have multiple investigations going on by special counsel for a host of various different issues that each and every one of us talk about each and every day. We talked about it already on this show with the January 6th insurrection. Why is that not already operational, fully functioning, and investigation start? Because let me say the one thing about Donald Trump. All right. If this was something that the Trump Organization was handling and it took this amount of time to get something started, you'd be fired. That's just the problem with Trump. He wanted it. If it happened on a Monday, by Tuesday, it's not started already, you're fired. That's just how he was. He would set the task, and your job is to get it done. I don't want to hear whining. Let me tell me about your sister's, brother's, cousin's, next door neighbor's birthday that you had to attend to. I don't give a shit about that. Bring your ass to the office. You get the special counsel. You get that thing going. I want to see movement, movement, movement. That's how Donald Trump did. The problem, of course, is he doesn't know what the movement is, and his ignorance and arrogance is what destroyed, the re-election for him. But to turn around and to wish never happens again, that this should never happen again, let me tell you something. That's a very scary notion that anybody should ever think that it'll never happen again. Many Jews use that line, and we watched what happened in Charlottesville, right, where they were walking down the street screaming, "Jews will not replace us." Jewish Anti-Defamation League put out a statement the other day. I think hate crimes against Jews and synagogues are up like 2,000%. I mean, this is really not a joke. You know how you make sure it never happens again? Like I said, put this animal in the box, seal it, and get rid of it. That's the way that you need to do it. And I don't care about rules right now. Biden controls the rules. Merrick Garland controls the rules. And I'm not saying to break the law in order to convict him. He's broken the law more than enough times. The information is there. Pull it out and just start. How about just start with an indictment? Let's just start with an indictment.
And I think that's coming. I agree. Look, we don't want to become like Trump, right? We want to have rules. And I'm not one who, Michael, hopes that things are going to get better without us doing things like holding him and Giuliani and the rest of them accountable and making whatever reforms are necessary. Where is the January 6th commission? I agree. It should be in place to thoroughly investigate and publicize what happened and make changes for the future so that that kind of thing doesn't happen again. So I'm not a wisher and a hoper, but I'm also not somebody who's going to get in the mud with Trump and play by his vision of how things work. You know, that the mightiest and the most powerful win, the rules be damned. We don't want to become that. And I think that will be worse for the country than trying to do this, you know, the democratic, lawful way to make sure that we get it right.
No, no. What you have to do is you have to win this scenario by any reasonable measure possible. And here's the reason why. Because if you don't, if Donald Trump skates, he has now set the bar for the next Donald Trump. The Donald Trump 2.0 that's richer, smarter, and more sinister than Donald Trump. And somebody like that will finish what Donald Trump started, which is to make this country fascist, to make him and to appoint him as our supreme leader. And what you need to do, again, is you need to set the bar higher than where Donald Trump brought it, which is really deep down in the dumpster dive, right? You really need to do something like that in order to set the record straight for the next fascist pig, right, like Trump.
And I think you and I are reaching some kind of almost a consensus here. You said reasonably necessary. I can agree with that. We need to do what's reasonably necessary, what's legal, to hold Giuliani, Trump, the whole group of them accountable. I agree with you on that. We need to be very vigorous about that, while at the same time accomplishing a positive, substantive agenda for the American people, which Biden is off to a good start.
Okay. But Mark, they don't go hand in hand. That's the whole thing. What you're doing is you're adding a watermelon to a grape. And they're not the same, and they shouldn't even be in the same bowl, right? That's the point. The point is the commissions should be established, regardless of whether or not indictments are coming. That should be done immediately. And on top of that, we should not be thinking about, well, if we do the commissions, then therefore we can't get what Biden promised: prison reform, immigration, right? Fair wages, infrastructure, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Whatever he promised, this is where Trump ends up beating the Democrats again. Or if it's not Trump, it's the next asshole, like the Josh Hawleys, the moron Cruz, right? All of them, where they're going to say, wait. Joe Biden made the following promises to the American people to become our 46th president. He said X, Y, and Z. Of the X, Y, and Z, which ones did Joe Biden actually pass any legislation at all? Oh, none of the three? Really? What happened to prison reform? He was such a big advocate for prison reform. He was such a big advocate for immigration. It is unfair, it is illegal, it is reprehensible to remove parents from their children and throw children into cages. Meanwhile, what's happened so far? The fact is, Joe Biden has incredibly qualified people working for him. Let them do their job. Why does infrastructure have anything to do with immigration? Why does infrastructure have anything to do, and it shouldn't, with fair wages or voting, gerrymandering? I mean, let each person do their job. You have 5,000 employees. Let the 5,000 people do their damn job. And at the same time, let Joe Biden be the CEO of the company. Let them stand in line all the way outside, if it has to be, right? Around the block twice, in order for them to bring to Biden what they need to be done. I mean, you got to run this the right way instead of, oh, well, all we're talking about now is the COVID relief package, vaccination, and infrastructure. Everything else be damned. No.
Michael,
and they're going to use it. The Republicans are going to use it against the Democrats, big league, or as Trump would say, bigly, come right. 2022.
But everything else you described is in process. You know, the climate change piece, you know, energy, infrastructure, immigration reform. And so I think Biden is on a path where he's going to present a very substantive set of accomplishments, not only next year, but when he runs for re-election in 2024. And again, I think we're capable of doing several things at once: holding Trump and his ilk accountable through the criminal justice system and the legislative process, if necessary, but also getting some substantive things done. Because I think at the election time, the American voters are going to say, what have you done for us? they're not really going to care so much about a vendetta against Trump and his people. They need to be held accountable, but I don't think that's a platform you want to run on for re-election.
You're right. It's not the platform. However, let me ask you this question. I'll ask it to Jeff. Where are we at with the Paris Climate Accord? Are we back in?
Yes.
I think so. I think if we're not, we're heading in that direction. But
I believe we're heading in the right direction. Yeah. I don't believe that it was signed as of yet.
The most important thing to me that Biden can do as president, and this might not be something that is part of his reelection platform, but it will be part of the durable legacy and what's needed in this country, is somehow giving up power that the office has. And that's establishing reestablishing guardrails on the presidency, setting aside this notion that the president is above the law, that they can do anything and not face any consequences, putting teeth into the impeachment ability of Congress, so effectively making the presidency somewhat less powerful than it is by making the president clearly and definitively accountable in the future, is the presidency clearly wasn't during the last 4 years. I mean, that was the most dangerous thing, was a completely lawless president with no accountability. And that's where we remain in danger going forward. We've gotten past 2020. That election is over in terms of its results, but the danger still exists in the next election. If it is, you know, a Josh Hawley or a, you know, God, you know, I mean, as crazy as it is that Donald Trump got elected, it's just as crazy that Don Jr. could get elected, but it could happen. He could get the nomination in a heartbeat. That's the scary thing. Is somebody is you know, one off from a FEB is still dangerous.
Both parties, I think, have let the presidency become far too powerful. You know, Congress, you know, they don't invoke the War Powers Act. They don't use their budgetary authority like they should. Our ethics laws are a shame. And these are all the things that Trump exploited and which made him so dangerous. So I agree, Jeff, with you that we need to, you know, really have some hard limits on this, but also requires Congress to step up. It was very easy for them, and they did this for the first two George Bushes.
Look, I hate to say it, Mark. I'm a bigger fan right now of undoing all of the destructive things Trump has done over the last 4 years. Just as an update in terms of the Paris Climate Accord, the point I was trying to make on that, when I asked you the question whether or not that it was signed, the answer is it was signed. It was signed January 20th of 2021. There was the very first act that Joe Biden did via executive order. And what he needs to do the same thing that Trump did. You have executive powers, use it. You need to get things back on track, because to sit there and to try to work with Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell's a fucking asshole. There's not a chance in the world Mitch McConnell wants to work with Joe Biden. It's not in his best interest. So everything that Biden puts forth, if Biden came up with the absolute cure for cancer and they needed $500 by the Republicans in order, right, to, you know, to roll it out, Mitch McConnell would find a reason why it's too much money and it's not legitimate, right? Look, that's Mitch McConnell.
Biden has done a lot by executive order, starting with rolling back a lot of Trump's executive orders. But there are just some things you cannot do by executive order. You cannot spend money by executive order. You've got to figure out a way to get a budget bill through reconciliation or another process through the Congress. So, again, you've got to do both. You cannot simply govern by executive order. That's a mistake, because the other thing we learned with Trump is that obviously those executive orders can just be rolled back and changed if you've got somebody in office who's as evil as he was. So I think we've got to use all these avenues. And I think Biden is doing a pretty good job in first 4 months of using these avenues to undo what Trump did and also move the country in a better direction.
He'll be able to use popularity, I mean, which is something, you know, when you look at 63% approval or whatever the numbers are this week, I mean, that's numbers that Trump never dreamed of. And having that kind of base of support will enable him to do a lot of these things, will give him the latitude going forward that Trump never had, that George W. Bush never had. It's hard to argue so far with a lot of the success that Biden had. I would have been one who, I guess, took issue with the way he campaigned a little bit, but it was working for him. The proof is in the results. And you're right, it's only been 4 months. I would want to see more combative, I tend to be of the Old Testament, vengeance is mine. You know that, Mark. I'd rather see some more of that coming the Republicans' way. It's going to be coming. Let's hope Merrick Garland does his job. I know hope isn't a strategy. I think that they are lining up these investigations and these indictments. I know we're nearly out of time and want to wrap up here, but I want to make sure that everybody has the chance to get in their last word and last thoughts, and want to see if there's anything Michael would care to impart with or mention that we haven't brought up so far during this discussion.
No, other than to say that, yes, I agree with you in the fact that the district attorney, Cyrus Vance, along with an incredibly competent and qualified special counsel brought in, Mark Pomerantz, they are fastidious in terms of how they are going through the millions of documents. And I've seen these documents. They're stacked up in across an entire wall over at the office. They know every single document that's in there. They're prepared to bring the indictments down the road. The question becomes, when? What's the delay? What was going on between Washington, the Southern District of New York, prior to the election? I mean, there's so many unanswered questions. What's happening with the FOIA office? Why does everybody have to fight for information that you're supposed to be entitled to? And when you finally get the information, like in my FOIA request, I got 58 pages, only of which one of them had any relevance, and it was 80% redacted. So I don't even know what was on it. The rest is all garbage. Right? There's so many things that are wrong here. And it's all of that wrong that gives the Republicans the chance to pounce on Democrats, when the truth is Democrats should be pouncing on the Republicans right now. People like Josh Hawley should be indicted. People like Mitch McConnell should be indicted. Right? People like Marjorie Taylor Greene should be indicted. Anybody, Don Jr. should be indicted for the insurrection as well. Rudy Giuliani, indicted. What are we doing? What are we waiting for? And here's my last thought on it. If, in fact, that they don't start doing this and that they don't end up indicting these individuals, I truly believe that the American people, Republican and Democrat alike, will lose absolute confidence in any faith that they have in the system, whereby Democrats were very quick to use this line, right? No one is above the law.
That's a good place to end it. Thank you, Michael. I knew it was going to be spirited, very spirited conversation. So,
Jeff, Mark, thanks for having me. Now I have to go take my blood pressure medication. So you all.
Thank you so much. Keep up.
All right. Don't ask me to come on here again unless I'm fully medicated.
Hey, we'll see you down the road, man.
Don't blame us.
Look forward to it. My pleasure, guys.
Time for us to wrap up. Our great thanks to Michael Cohen for being part of today's discussion.
And as always, we welcome and appreciate your feedbacks and your thoughts to comments at arepublicpodcast.com, or add your comments on our Facebook page.
And please share the podcast on your social media. Help us expand the world of people fighting to save our grand experiment in self-government.
And if the Republic is still standing, we'll be back in a week. I'm Mark Brewer.
And I'm Jeff Timmer. Thank you for listening.